Okay, let me continue on with this. I have just a few more comments, and I know that there are several questions building up. One of the things that I found very interesting, the Kohanim, there's this theme, I totally disagree with this, the critical theory. And the critical theory is put forth primarily by a man named Wellhausen right at about the turn of the century. And basically, it states that the Bible was written by man, and it was edited and re-edited and re-edited several times, and that you have all these contradictions, and I don't believe there are contradictions in the Scripture. I believe that there are contradictions in our understanding. There's a big difference between the two. And one of the things in Deuteronomy, it talks about that that the Levites carrying the Ark of the Covenant. And so in the critical theory, they come in and say, well, see, that shows a contradiction between the commandments in Leviticus and Exodus, because there only the priests carried it. But you have to remember that every priest is first a Levite. Okay? It's not a contradiction. Okay, but here's this I found interesting. Several reasons are given why Levi was not numbered together with the other tribes. One is because they were not doomed to die in the wilderness, but entered the promised land. As against this is pointed out that the tribe of Levi was considerably smaller than the other tribes, because its numbers were depleted through their being grazed by fire when they carried the ark. Okay, in other words, that, you know, picture this. You got, you know, the Ark of the Covenant, and you have, we need 18 volunteers up here right now to carry the ark. The 18 guys come running forward, and 11 of them immediately, they bump against the ark, and they're living toast out there. And so quickly, you have a bunch more come to fill, and some of them get fried, and then so it wasn't like that. But sometimes the absurdity of the Agadah, I get tickled at, and it's a good balance, because there are such good things in the Agadah, you don't want to get carried away and say, well, let's accept it all. And when you get into some of the things that you know just aren't the way they were, then it's that caution to come back and really very carefully treat very carefully everything you read. Gerald, you going to say something on that?
Well, just to back up a little bit, you said the Kohanim are first Levites. Does that mean that they can do any of the Levitical job?
No. They had their job as Kohanim. And so these families that were the Kohanim had a different job from the other Levi'im, but they are still Levi'im. So at times the Bible talks about a job of a Levite, and it's really referring to a job of a priest. But it might say a Levite because the priests are Levites. Okay? So the good rule of thumb is every Kohen, every priest is a Levite, but not every Levite is a priest. Just a couple more. Jacob predicted of Simeon and Levi, I'll divide them in Jacob, scatter them in Israel, from Genesis 49, verse 7. This was fulfilled by their becoming teachers in the schoolhouses everywhere. And that is one of their main primary functions, was to teach the people. The tribe of Levi would teach sinners that sacrifice without true repentance does not constitute atonement. And that's true. Here's something that you want to write down. Originally, Shoterim, that's spelled Shoterim, Shoterim, which are officials of the Beit Din. Officials of the Beit Din, that's the court of judgment. were appointed only from the tribe of Levi. It is to be noted that it's through the tribe of Levi, and this would be specifically through a priestly family, the Hasmoneans, that the Greeks were conquered. Okay, now, Daryl, you had some questions. Tell you what, let me get what Dell had on the etymology of Levi, and then we'll take your questions.
I just wanted to mention, Joe, that Rashi wrote that the matriarchs, Jacob's wives, were prophetesses, and that Jacob, they knew that Jacob was to beget 12 tribes by four wives. And when Leah had had her third son, which was Levi, she said, now that her husband would have no cause for complaint against her because she had given Jacob her full share of children, which would have been three of the sons.
Uh-huh.
And the verb that's used in Hebrew there for when she says, this time my husband will become attached to me, is yilave, which is the root word from which they get Levi. So they say that Levi therefore has the connotation of becoming attached. And it also was the only tribe that was named by God himself, because it goes on to say that therefore, he called his name Levi. In other words,
it's very interesting
that God himself named Levi. And therefore, in the prophetic fulfillment of Levi was to become attached, and specifically attached to God, because God gave him that name. That's in Genesis.
It's in chapter 29. And that would be in verse
34.
And she conceived again and bore a son and said, now this time my husband will become attached to me because I have borne him three sons, therefore his name was called Levi. But what you're saying is that it says now he, therefore he called him Levi.
In Hebrew it's definitely
masculine. Very good. Okay, Daryl.
Back in Chronicles 35, I think, it talks about the priests skinning the animals.
Right.
And I was under the impression that the people usually skin the animals.
The people do skin the animals. But what it was referring to there were public sacrifices. And in public sacrifices, that is fulfilled by either the Kohanim or the Leva'im.
Okay, then about the same place it talks about the different leaders giving so many thousands of sheep and goats.
Right, it listed off, I think, three different heads of the Leva'im. And that is what these will be, are going, we'll see that the tribes of Levi, the tribe of Levi was divided into different divisions. And each division had a head. And we're going to, in the second tape tonight, be dealing with that, of these terms for the heads of the divisions. And then you have a head of each family within the division. And apparently what it was is that three of the division heads of the Levites were so pleased with the Lord and pleased at the response of the people that they donated as a thank offering to publicly give this before the people as sacrifices before God. What it shows is that the Leva'im's heart, right up to their leadership, was turned to God at this time.
So the animals that were given were public sacrifice, so the priests would be doing the slaying and the skinning and the whole process.
That's right.
Were the animals then from the private supply of these leaders?
Or that's right. It was that they paid for the expense of the animals. Like, for instance, you're going to have a collective herd, okay? A collective herd, a collective flock, let's say, of sheep that are controlled by the Leva'im. Now you want to go to Jerusalem and offer a sacrifice. So you go to the chamber receipts and you pay for that animal. Okay? And then an animal will be taken, the money is deposited into the temple treasury, and they will take an animal in your name and sacrifice it. Okay? Or you do the sacrificing. What these guys did is they paid for however many hundred heads of animals into the temple treasury. So many were taken from the communal flocks and sacrificed, but they paid for them. They're the ones that supplied these sacrifices. It's not like that they had their own ranch and they went out and cut out 300 or 400 sheep or whatever, but they were taken from these and they paid the money for them.
But the money was their own money.
It was their own money. That's correct.
Okay. I think in probably chapter 29, then, the various tribes are mentioned. And
yes, chapter 29 of 2 Chronicles.
Yeah, so that's proving that there were still people from all over Israel, the northern territories, that still went to Jerusalem, although other places of worship had been set aside.
That's correct. When the Assyrians came in, over a process of time, they deported all the people and left remnants back there. But there was still, it was an Assyrian province. It became an Assyrian province. And they had deported many, many peoples up there. But they had also brought in Assyrians, Assyrian religious leaders, Assyrian whatever, businessmen. And the majority of the population was still Israelite during this period. So remember that the big king that Hezekiah has to fight against is Sennacherib. Sennacherib is the son of Sargon II, who is the one that defeated the northern kingdom. So you're not talking 200 years here, time period, but definitely the northern kingdom was still there. It just had lost its autonomy.
But even since the division and the death of Solomon, all the northern kings still were not able to wipe out going to Jerusalem.
That's right. That's right. The people still. And the majority of the Levi'im had, back at the time of Yeroboam, which we saw last week, had come down and migrated. There was a big migration down to the south because the majority of the Levi'im were dedicated to God. And they would not participate in the idolatry of the northern kingdom. Okay.
Do you make anything of the fact that at the beginning of chapter 30 in 2 Chronicles, they make a distinction between Israel and Judah and Ephraim and Manasseh? In other words, it says, and Hezekiah sent to all Israel and Judah and wrote letters also to Ephraim and Manasseh. Coming together at that point of the house of Joseph?
I don't know. I don't know. It's an interesting point. Okay. I want you to go to the book of Bamidbar, Numbers. And let's go to chapter 16. Now, we dealt with this chapter a little bit last week. But I was thinking on this, that I really should spend some time on this. I hope to complete this portion before we finish this side of this tape. It might take the whole time and probably won't. But here we have the rebellion of Korah. And Korah is going to be, he's a Levite. Now, he's not a priest, but he's a Levite. And he is jealous of Aaron. He's jealous of Moshe and Aaron. And we'll see how it starts off. It says, now Korah, the son of Izhar, the son of Kohat, the son of Levi, with Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and the sons of Peleth, the sons of Reuven, took men, and they rose up before Moshe with some of the children of Israel, 250 leaders of the congregation, representatives of the congregation, men of renown. They gathered together against Moshe and Aaron and said to them, you take too much upon yourselves. for all the congregation is holy. Every one of them, and the Lord is among them. Why then do you exalt yourselves above the congregation of the Lord? So when Moshe heard it, he fell on his face and he spoke to Korah and all his company, saying, tomorrow morning the Lord will show who is his and who is holy, and will cause him to come near to him. That one whom he chooses, he will cause to come near to him. Which is, there's so many things to do word plays on. The role of the Kohanim is to join the people back to God. That's what the name specifically means, to join the people back to God. The methodology of doing this will be the Avodah, the service that God institutes. And the Avodah, the service that he institutes, is the concept of sacrifice. Okay? And if you look up sacrifice in a Webster's dictionary, it'll tell you, it'll give you a definition that is totally alien to the Bible. The definition it gives you is to offer things to a deity. Okay? That is not the purpose of sacrifice in the Bible. The word korban means to bring near. Okay? And that's exactly what Moshe refers to here. Tomorrow morning, the Lord will show who is his and who is holy, and will cause him to come near to him. That one whom he chooses, he will cause to come near to him. Okay, let's go back. Let's hold our hands here and go back over to Shemot chapter 19, Exodus 19. In Shemot 19, the children of Israel have arrived at Mount Sinai. And we're going to start in verse 5 and read down to verse 6. Now therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be a special treasure to me above all people, for all the earth is mine. And you shall be to me a kingdom, a priest, and a holy nation. So what Korah and the 250 other leaders claimed was true, that all the people are holy. They're all set apart to God. And there is a truth that all the people are to be priests. I mean, we have no beef with that. We should agree with that. But we have, as we go on, that he has where all the people are priests, all the people are holy, but then he takes this one tribe and he sets them apart, and they are holy in a different way. Okay? In other words, they are set apart in a different way. Then he takes the family of Aaron, and they are set apart from the other families in the tribe of Levi. And they become the Kohanim. Okay, now, this basic problem that we see, going back to number 16, of what the children of Korah say, you take too much upon yourselves. Verse 3, for all the congregation is holy, every one of them, and the Lord is among them. And this next part, why then do you exalt yourselves above the congregation of the Lord? Now let me see if I can expand this, because I think this is a very common problem that we have in the body today. One thing that I see them saying is that, why do you think that you're special before God and I'm not? That's one thing. Second thing, why do you get to do things and I don't get to do them? For instance, why do you get to burn incense before the Lord and I don't? I mean, that even seems to be the central issue as we continue on, because the very next thing Moshe says is, okay, we're going to prove who has the right to do this and who does not have the right to do this. All of you take a censer full of incense and you bring fire before the Lord and let's see what happens. Okay? And what happens is there's an earthquake and all these guys get swallowed up. Okay? Anybody that brings strange fire, the fire is dedicated to God. He sends the Kohanim out to gather up all these censers because they were given to God. Let me read this, verse 6. Do this, take censers, Korah, and all your company, put fire in them and put incense in them before the Lord tomorrow. And it shall be that the man whom the Lord chooses shall be the Holy One. You take too much upon yourselves, you sons of Levi. Then Moshe said to Korah, hear now, you sons of Levi. Is it a small thing to you that the God of Israel has separated you from the congregation of Israel to bring you near to himself, to do the work of the tabernacle of the Lord and to stand before the congregation and to serve him? And that he has brought you near to himself, you and all your brethren, the sons of Levi, with you? And are you seeking the priesthood also? Therefore, you and all your company are gathered together against the Lord. Okay, they are found in rebellion against the Lord. And what is our own that you murmur against him? Okay, what I want to bring this down to is that they had a job that was given to them by God. But they weren't satisfied with their job because they saw the job of our own as being a higher job than theirs. And they were jealous. And they wanted to do something that wasn't their job.
They wanted to do something that God had not called them to do.
That's right. Now,
what we have today.
That's exactly why. That's why I'm bringing. That's why I want to deal with this. One of the things that they are saying, not only are they saying that they want the other guy's job, they're saying they don't respect the job that God gave to them. And so, I mean, that's what Moshe says. He says is it a small thing for you, to you, that the God of Israel has separated you from the congregation of Israel to bring you near to himself to do the work of the tabernacle of the Lord and to stand before the congregation to serve him? I think that there's nothing new under the sun. This is one of the most common diseases that we have that hinders us in our faith. Now, I'm going to turn over to 1 Corinthians. And go to chapter 12, verse 12. For as the body is one, it has many members, but all the members of that one body being many are one body, so also is Messiah. For by one Spirit we were all immersed into one body, whether Jews or Greeks, whether slaves or free, and have all been made to drink into one Spirit. For in fact the body is not one member, but many. If the foot should say, because I am not a hand, I am not of the body. Is it therefore not of the body? And if the ear should say, because I am not an eye, I am not of the body, is it therefore not of the body? If the whole body were an eye, where would be the hearing? If the whole were hearing, where would be the smelling? But now God has set the members, each one of them, in the body, just as he pleased. And if they were all one member, where would the body be? But now indeed there are many members, yet one body. And the eye cannot say to the hand, I have need of you, nor again the head to the feet, I have no need of you. No, much rather those members of the body which seem to be weaker are necessary. And those members of the body which we think to be less honorable, on these we bestow greater honor. And our unpresentable parts have greater modesty. But our presentable parts have no need. But God composed the body, and that is one of the most important things to remember. But God composed the body, having given greater honor to that part which lacks it, that there should be no schism in the body, but that the members should have the same care for one another. And if one member suffers, all the members suffer with it. Or if one member is honored, all the members rejoice with it. Now you are the body of Messiah, members individually, and God has appointed these in the congregation. It goes on to different jobs and so forth, different tasks. One of the things that I've heard numbers of time is that, you know, we're all different members, but everybody wants to be the mouth. Okay, that's true. Now, where I have this come up, and I have this come up wherever I go to speak, I have this come up constantly. Now, people don't come up to me and say, I want to be a teacher. They do that some. But I don't have that much. Or they don't come up and say, oh, I want to be a prophet. I don't get that much. What they come up, what they come up and say is, when we talk about the temple, what they say is, it's not fair that only the Jews get to go into the inner courtyards. Why do I have to stay out in the outer courtyards? Okay? And then you take it a step further, and I have women come up and say, I'm going to tell you, in the last month, I've had this no less than a dozen times. Okay? I've had at least 12 times, I've had women come up to me and say, why do women have to stay in the courtyard of the women? It isn't fair. The men get to go up further. It just isn't right, and I want to be able to do what they do. Oh, well, then let's take it further. I mean, you have the court of Israel. The men could say, this isn't good enough. I want to be able to go into the court of the priest. Okay, and then, I mean, you can always take it a step further, and you want to go into the holy place, or the Holy of Holies. I mean, the Levites can go into the court of the priest, but they can't go into the temple building. So, I mean, you can see all the Levites saying, it's not fair. They get to do that, and I don't get to do it. And then, I mean, you know, and then all the priests can say, well, why does the high priest get to go behind the veil? Okay? And it's the same basic problem, is that, number one, we're not content with who we are. And we need to find out, first off, who we are in the Lord. And then we will find, when we discover who we are in the Lord, that position is full of all the honor and all the dignity. God has a full scope of things for us to do. And that, number one, when we're wanting to do somebody else's job, almost certainly we're not doing ours. Number two is that it is a disease that, first off, it's an imperfection in your own walk with God. It is a disease that the enemy will capitalize on you, and totally, what you're committing is the rebellion of Korah. And so I'm going to go with one more passage, 1 Corinthians chapter 7. Verse 17. Now, Mother, you actually even caused me to cover this tonight. Well, will you ask me, why do we need to study the Levites? Well, I think we need to study all the Bible. And we need to understand the priesthood. And it is true that all of Israel, every believer included, is part of a royal priesthood. We're part of a holy nation. It doesn't make us priest in the sense of the temple service, though. It doesn't make us Levite. It is an application that we will apply in our own houses before our families.
I hope you understood. I asked that as a question. Because
certainly. Certainly. Yeah. But what I'm saying, it's a very valid question. I was asked today on television about, well, why is it important for us to study the temple as non-Jews? And it's the same thing, is that we need to understand, and you know, that if I'm going to understand my role as a priest to my family, I have to understand the role of the priest. And I have to understand the Levites before I can understand the priest. Okay, now 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 17, but as God has distributed to each one, as the Lord has called each one, so let him walk. That's good counsel. And so I ordain in all the congregations, was anyone called while circumcised? Let him not become uncircumcised. Let me restate that. Was anyone called while he was Jewish? Then let him not become un-Jewish.
Sounds like a union job to me.
Yeah. Was anyone called while uncircumcised? Let him not be circumcised. In other words, that do not think that you need to become Jewish because it's going to give you a higher status. It's not going to give you a higher status. Circumcision is nothing, and uncircumcision is nothing. But look at the next few words are so powerful. But keeping the commandments of God, what commandments? We're talking the Torah, is what matters. Hey, he's not even writing this to a Jewish audience. He's writing it to Corinthians, dumb Greeks. Okay, no offense against the Greek people. I'm just saying that the Greeks knew nothing of the Bible. Let each one remain in the same calling in which he was called. Were you called while a slave? Do not be concerned about it. But if you can be made free, rather use it. For he who is called in the Lord while a slave is the Lord's freeman. Likewise, he who is called while free is Messiah's slave.